2 weeks, we are going to be looking at the chapter in the Bible of Isaiah 58. And I'm going to share a little bit today and next week. We're going to be looking at a few different verses in there. But this time of year, kind of carrying on from Liz's theme, this time of year for parents, okay, it's time for sports days. Anyone enjoy sports days? We took Billy and Freya to sports day this year, and we were kind of a bit loud. And we took Paul last year. We banned him this year. We were kind of a bit loud. And in sports day, they were robbed, yeah. In sports day, there is a race called the relay race. And I always love watching kids do the relay race. And so basically they hold kind of what looks like one of those rolling pins that you use with Play-Doh. Anyone know what I mean? Okay, they have hold of one of those and they run their bit of the race and then they pass the rolling pin onto the next kid who runs their bit of the race and eventually it's all over. Eventually. Right? Because what I love about children doing this, okay, is that one of them will start off and they give it their all. I mean, you put the fastest runner in there first because you want your team in the lead when the second kid gets the rolling pin. The thing is, usually the second kid, okay, and if you've been that second child, okay, we'll pray for you later if there's some work that needs to be done. Usually the second kid isn't the fastest. You normally put the fastest first and last. Okay, I know that because I used to be in the relay race. And so they give the baton to the second kid. Now, in a kid's race, usually the second kid is stood there talking to his mate or her mate. And like the baton's coming to them and this kid is absolutely running their socks off, okay, or shoes off literally sometimes when you watch infant sports days. And they're just kind of stood there having a bit of a chat. Ever noticed that at sports day? And I'd love to say that I was one of those nurturing parents who goes, that's all right. It's the taking part that counts. But normally, we're all there, okay, and I say we, and I look at certain other parents in this room going, get the baton! Okay, and this all of a sudden, this kid, like, it's like, oh, and so he gets the baton, and he's running, still talking to his mate who's set off at the same time, okay, and they're doing their bit, and then you get to the third person, who by this point has got bored usually, if they're in, like, foundation stage or whatever, they're sat on the grass, because they're bored of waiting for the rolling pin to come to them, and all of a sudden, they get up, okay, and they start running, and they're, like, watching for where their mum is, okay, or watching for where those who are tuning. And anybody recognize this from school sports day? We watched the other day a sports day from around about 12 years ago. He's not here, I'm gutted, okay? But we watched Jordan Partridge in the sack race at age 4. Okay, and what happened was we went to that sports day and Sue told me that there was a race to get like the front row seats, all right? What I didn't realize was she wasn't going to join me in the race. So like we got there, the gate opened. I didn't even wait for the gate to open. I jumped over the fence, right? Math was with me and we jumped over the fence and we legged it for the front row because we wanted to be there to cheer on the kids we had been to see. And Kieran and Jordan were there and they got their little, they looked so cute. I wish I'd have brought it with me. Maybe one day we will show that. Okay. And they got their little sacks on and what happened? What happened was the gobby supporters that they had, before the race started, we were like, go on, boys, you can do this. And they started the sack race like a minute before everybody else. They had to be brought back. And then when the whistle went, they were like looking around, talking to their mates, you know, oh, we're meant to be jumping. And it's like Jordan just jumped on the spot. I'm not quite sure how he did that. He didn't really make his way forward very quickly. But the thing is, going back to like, you know, I got sidetracked there because they were really cute. We literally watched it about 3 days ago. But this is sports day with kids. And so the third runner runs and all of a sudden you get the really competitive kid at the end whose kind of parents have trained them for the last 3 months to get hold. That's not me at all. To get, because that means I'd have to go running with them. So you kind of train them, they get hold of the baton and they run with all of their might to cross the finish line first. You see, sometimes when the baton is being passed on, and especially when it's children, they don't really get the importance of it. They don't get the importance of getting it and not dropping it. They don't get the importance of getting hold of the baton and running with all of their might. They're just in it for a good time. They're in it. They're having a laugh. They're talking to their mates. They're waving at their mum. They're like looking at their teacher, and all of their other team are screaming their name. And they just think they're just doing that, not for any other thing than the fact that they like them. You see, the thing is, when we pass on the baton, it's really important. When we pass on the baton, actually being people who grab hold of it well is good. What I want to do this morning is I'm going to read us quite a big chunk out of Isaiah 58. And this morning, I've entitled this morning, it's your move. So I'm going to be talking about the way that we do things and the moves that we need to make. We're going to start at verse 6. So it talks about fasting, and it talks about the way that the Israelites have been fasting. And it says this in verse 6, and then we're going to read to the bottom of the chapter. Okay, I'm reading from the Voice translation. It says this, no, this is God speaking. What I want in a fast is this, to liberate those tied down and held back by injustice, to lighten the load of those heavily burdened, to free the oppressed and shatter every type of oppression. A fast for me involves sharing your food with people who have none. That made me think. A fast for me means sharing your food. Because we just think of a fast as being not having any food. But God turns things on its head sometimes. Giving those who are homeless a space in your home, giving clothes to those who need them, and not neglecting your own family. Then, oh, then your light will break out like the warm golden rays of a rising sun. In an instant, you will be healed. Your righteousness will precede and protect you. The glory of the eternal will follow and defend you. Then when you do call out, my God, where are you? The eternal one will answer, I am here. I am here. If you remove the yoke of oppression from the downtrodden among you, stop accusing others and do away with mean and inflammatory speech. If you make sure that the hungry and oppressed have all that they need, then your light will shine like the darkness. Even your bleakest moments will be bright as clear day. The Eternal One will never leave you. He will lead you in the way that you should go. When you are dried up and when you feel dried up and worthless, God will nourish you and give you strength. And you will grow like a garden lovingly tended. You'll be like a spring whose water never runs out. You will discover there are people among your own who can rebuild this broken down city out of the ancient ruins. You will firm up its ancient foundations. And all around, others will call you repairer of broken down walls and rebuilder of livable streets. If because of the Sabbath you set aside your own pursuits and pleasure, and you honor the Sabbath and sanctify the day by leaving it to and for the eternal, if you speak of Sabbath delight but avoid speaking idle words and refuse to get caught up and busy with your own interests and concerns, then you will discover joy such as only the eternal can give. And I will raise you high and make you reach as wide as the earth. And you will live on all that I promised to Jacob, your ancestor, the heart of Israel. Do you know what? I've been reading that chapter in the Bible all week. Can't get out of it. I've read it in nearly every version that I can find. And just taking in what God says in that chapter to his people. This chapter wasn't written to those outside of God's people. It was written to those who say they are his. And what I want to do this morning is I want to just bring us a little bit of stuff for those of you who call this place home. There's going to be some of that in this morning, but I want to look at what can happen when we choose to move, when we choose to wait, grab hold of the baton that God gives us and run with it like we have never run before. I want to look at what happens when we grab hold of the thing that God has got for us individually and corporately. What happens when we run? Because sometimes we wait for God. Anyone ever done that? Sometimes we expect God to do all the moving and we expect to sit here and we expect to then just join in the party. And this morning, as I read this over this last week, as I've been in Isaiah 58 nearly every single day this week, just soaking up what it says, this is the crux of Isaiah 58. When you do this, God says, then I'll do that. Anyone ever prayed, God, shine your light into our community? Anyone ever prayed that? If you've not, I do wonder whether you know Jesus, okay? God, let people find you. Let people know you. Break a light into our community, into the place in which we live, into the place in which we work, into the schools. We've been going around the town praying over all the schools over the last month. God, just break in. Just Holy Spirit, break in. And God says, okay, you make your move and then I'll make mine. Because what Isaiah 58 says is when you do this, then your light will shine in the darkness. Then I will do something incredible. And I want to look at the fact that God is ready to do something incredible. But what he's waiting for is our move. He's waiting for my move. He's waiting for your move. In the past 2 years, God has been moving. God has been moving people. There are people sat in our hall this morning who weren't sat with us 2 years ago. And there are people not sat here this morning who were sat here 2 years ago. God has been moving things around. And we don't always understand that and we don't get that, but God's been doing his move and he is now going to await our move. He's going to await our yes. He's going to await us saying, God, as we've been singing, you have my heart. You have it all. You have my yes. To move means this, to take action, to make progress, to develop on a particular direction or to change position. I'll read that again. To move means to take action, to make progress, to develop on a particular direction, or to change position. Isaiah 58 turns everything on its head for the Israelites. Isaiah 58 turns everything on its head that they thought that they knew. It turns it all around into something completely different. And this morning, maybe we think we know exactly how God's going to do everything and what he's going to do. And maybe this morning he's going to come and turn things around for us a little bit, because God appeals to us this morning, as he did in Isaiah 58, to move in active compassion. Do you know what? It's not about our programs. It's about people. Everything that God does, everything he has ever done, everything he ever will do is about people. It's not about power. It's not about program. It's not about any other P that we can think of, okay? It's about people. It is about you and I. It is about the people that we live near, that we work with, that we go to school with. Everything God does is about people. And God this morning wants our move so that he can do something in the hearts and lives of people. And I've got three really simple things this morning to tell you about movement. And to tell you about the movement that God talked about here in Isaiah 58. And the first thing is this, that moving isn't a religious act. The Israelites had got used to what they thought fasting was. And what they would do is they would go without food. Everybody would know that they were fasting because of how they would look, how they would dress, you know, how they might talk to one another. I don't know about you, but when I go without food, I have to be honest, when we did the fast last September, I really tried to be like Jesus. And sometimes I failed because I was hungry. And this is what the Israelites would do. They would put on sackcloth and ashes. Everybody would know that they were fasting. It was a religious act. Yeah, what God says is that's not the kind of fast that I want. That's not the kind of life dedicated to me that I want. The kind of life dedicated to me is when you go and help people. Is when you feed the poor. Is when you do everything that is about helping people in their hour of need. That is the kind of dedicated life to me that I want. And so God moved the Israelites from all that they knew and called to them to have a heart of compassion for those that they lived near and those that they did life with. It's not a religious act. We make any movement we do sometimes as Christians, and if you're a Christian in here, sometimes we make every movement we do, we turn it into a big religious act. Actually, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's God. Sometimes it's just us going, God, I'm here. And if you want me to move, I'll move. And if you want me to do something different, I'll do something different. And if you want me to go over there, God, I'll go over there. And if you want me to stay here, I'll stay here. Sometimes it's not a religious act. It's not something that we have to, you know, be in sackcloth and ashes over. Sometimes it's just us going, God, if you want me to move, I will do it. This is what movement in Isaiah 58 looked like. I've got a list for you. So God was saying to the people, this is how you think you show me that you're dedicated to me by this type of fast. But actually, this is how I want you to show me you're dedicated to me. So the list goes like this, that you feed the hungry, So it's not just about you fasting, it's about you feeding, that you clothe the poor, that you free those trapped in oppression, that you lift burdens from people's backs, that you care for the homeless, that you rebuild your communities and make them fit for purpose. And get this, that you create family in both the spiritual and the natural. And the Isaiah 58 says, don't neglect this. Don't neglect building family. Don't neglect building both spiritual and natural family. You see, none of these things are religious, but they are all spiritual. Feeding the poor is not a religious thing, but it is a spiritual thing. Caring for the homeless is not a religious thing necessarily, but it is a spiritual thing. It is what God requires of you and what he requires of me. And I love the bit where it talks about rebuilding communities and making them fit for purpose. I want to read you how it put it in the Message translation. It said this, if I can find it. You'll be known as those who can fix anything, restore old ruins, rebuild and renovate, make the community livable again. I love that. To make the community livable again. They may not be religious, but they are spiritual. Moving isn't a religious duty that we perform, but it's an outworking of the cry of God's heart for our world and our community. It's not a religious act, but it is a spiritual one. Last Sunday, we were on our prayer walk throughout the town, and we were praying over businesses and stuff like that. And for one reason and another, walking last Sunday for me would have been quite difficult. So I chose to go and sit in the marketplace. And I went and I sat on a bench and just watched what was going on in the marketplace around me, which on a Sunday night wasn't that much. And I just started praying over our town and praying over, you know, the businesses that were around me and all that kind of stuff. And just into my head came Isaiah 58, Isaiah 58, Isaiah 58. And I hadn't taken the Bible out with me, but I did have my phone. And so I got my app on my phone and I began to read Isaiah 58 in every single different version that there was. And I began to pray it over our town. I read it and I read it and I read it and I read it and I prayed it and I read it. And I sat there with tears streaming down my face. I am not sure what anyone thought as they walked past me. They probably thought I'd just like, you know, come out of the pub or something. And I just sat there and I read it and I read it. And God just began to speak to me about being people who will rebuild the community in which we live, about being people who will go out and who will feed, who will go out and who will clothe, who will be the ones where we're known as restorers. We're known. And it's not so that we can have glory. It's so that people can find Jesus. It's about people. And my prayer is that actually, every Christian in this town, wherever they worship, will grab a hold of this, and that we will be people who actually just go and do what needs to be done for the people in our town. That our movement will not be religious, but it will be spiritual. That our movement will not be something that just takes us into another ritual or into another routine, but our movement will be something that changes our community. Our movement will be something that God uses to change the community in which we live. Anyone with me? Anyone want this morning? I'm like, God, you know, we pray, God, shine your light into our community. And actually, God says, when you get up and move, when you get up and do something, then I'll do that. So moving is not religious. It's not a religious act. Let's not treat it as one. Secondly, moving is strategic. Our move has to be done with purpose and strategy, getting ready for what God is going to do. We need to be people that get ready well. There will be internal moves for us and external moves. There will be things that move in this room, okay, and that affect us that sit in here. And there will be things that move that affect those that live out in our community. And what I want to do this morning is just to take an opportunity to update you on some of the internal things that have been moving over the last few months. In September, our new pastoral system is going to kick in. And what we've looked at is the old model of church said that, you know, the pastor does all the pastoral stuff. And we've realized that as we grow, that's not going to cut it. Because the pastor has got two small kids and and a house and a marriage and all of that kind of stuff, as well as a church. So there is no way that 120 people or so within our church at the moment that I can pastor everybody effectively. I think you will all agree with that, and I won't take offense at that. It's absolutely true. And so what we want to do is go to a system where we pastor generationally. We're going to stick with the name, and we want to pastor generationally. So our noughts to 18s. Okay. Obviously, Paul and Liz already running our youth ministry, doing a fantastic job. Okay. They're going to be over, especially Liz in her role as youth pastor. They're going to be over our noughts to 18s. They're going to make sure that those kids, those young people, they are pastored. They're not just given a place to come. They're actually pastored and discipled, and we're looking at ways to do that. And they will build a team around them, okay, which will include our children's team to pastor those people. Our 18s to 35, James is going to lead the team that are going to pastor our 18s to 35s. It's the age group that we've always struggled with, really, because when they're 18, they go to uni. And we miss them when they go. And sometimes, you know, when they're a bit older and getting ready maybe to start a family, they come back because this is a great place to start a family. And so our 18s to 35, James is going to build a team to pastor those in that age bracket. Our 35s to 60s, Joe Parkinson is going to build a team to pastor those. It's not Joe doing that, okay? Same as it's not Liz doing the noughts to 18s, and it's not James doing the 18s to 35s. We're going to build team to do that. And then I'm really excited about this, because our 60 plus Mark and Jane Egan are going to build a team who are going to pastor that generation. And I'm so excited that actually every generation is going to have someone who is going to build a team to pastor them. I'm going to pastor our leaders. And this will add weight to the Connect leaders who are already doing a phenomenal job. You see, sometimes moving's got to be strategic. We've got a plan for God to move. We've got a plan for God to grow us. God over the last 2 years has done that, but we now need to plan for what he is going to do. Internally, most of you will know that we've appointed our first ever, actually, children's pastor. Miss Diane Cartwright. Okay. She's doing an amazing job. Okay. And she's just building a team. Okay. And she's going to work alongside Liz in pastoring the kids. And, but internally we said usually our kids ministry is tagged on to our youth ministry. And that's because when I first came, all those years ago, I came as youth and children's pastor and did the whole thing. Okay. But now we've realized actually our kids need their own kind of leader. And so Diane and the team around her are doing that. Behind the scenes for months, our board of trustees, which used to be our church council, but we've changed the name. Okay. Our board of trustees have been working flat out. GDPR. Most places are not liking that term, but do you know what? We're getting there and we're good. And these guys have worked. It's the internal workings. It's the internal strategies that we've been putting in place for growth, for God to do something. You see, movement needs to be strategic. Our volunteer base has grown. You should rock up on a Thursday. Okay. It's absolutely brilliant. I get no work done, right? Because everyone's just coming and knocking on my door. And can we have this? And can I see you about that? But I love it. This place is buzzing on a Thursday when all of our volunteer base come together. God is doing something. God is getting ready to move, but he's awaiting our move. And for us, over the last 12 months or so, the move has to have been strategic. Growth won't just happen. We have to plan for it. We have to move things around. And then when it comes, we'll be ready for it. Then when our light shines in the darkness. Then when people get to know Jesus, we're ready for it. We're ready for people to come in. We're ready to disciple them and to pastor them and to let them grow in the things of faith. This morning, it's not all about what God does. It's about us making a movement so that he can then have room to move. So secondly, our movement is strategic. And thirdly, moving is essential. It's not optional. I love change. It's coming up to September, so maybe that's why I'm preaching this. I love change, but I want to say to you this morning that moving is essential. You can't stay where you are now and where you have been for the last however many years and expect God to do something different, because he won't. Now, whether that is that we move, you know, literally, geographically or whatever, or whether that is that we move spiritually, there's got to be movement in us. And it's not optional. It's essential. When we pray, God, shine the light into the darkness and break out into our communities. These prayers are good and they are right, but we also have to realize that our movement will be part of the answer to those prayers. God can't move and us stay the same. If we're going to get on this bandwagon of what God is doing, we need to change. We need to move. We need to be part of the movement that God is doing. Movement is essential. You read so often in the Bible of movement that came before the miracle. Let me give you some examples of that. When the Israelites came up to the Jordan River, they'd come through the Red Sea. They'd walked around the wilderness for 40 years. They came to the Jordan River and God said, you step into the river and then I will do the miracle. The last time they got to a sea or a river, this is what God said, Moses, put your staff on it and when you do that, I'll part it. So the whole of Israel watched Moses, one man, okay, put his staff on the water and the water parted. When they got to the Jordan River, my guess, if I'd have been Joshua, if I'd have been the leaders then, I'd have been looking for the staff to stick on the water to watch it divide, to watch it spread out. But no, this is what God said. You make your move. You get into the river. And once you do that, I'll do the miracle. Once you move, I will move. You read the story of the widow who was going to make a cake for her and her son, and then they were going to die. And the man of God comes to her and he says, if you take the little you have, if you collect up as many jars as you can, if you take the little you have and you begin to pour it, okay, if you make the move, if you make something for me and then you pour the oil into jars, it will fill loads of jars. Can you imagine what must have been? That woman went and got as many jars as she could find. It wasn't like she just looked in her own house. The Bible says she went to those houses around her and she collected all of these jars and she began to fill them. They were all filled with oil because she made the move. She made the move. She collected the jars. She went round and got it, or she made the move and God did the miracle. The walls of Jericho. They marched around the walls for 7 days. They made the move and then God makes the move. If you look at Zacchaeus, Zacchaeus was in with the crowd and he was just walking with the crowd and then he comes to a tree and he climbs the tree. And because he climbed the tree, because he moved away from everybody else, salvation came to him that day. He moved. He didn't even realize he was doing it, but he moved so Jesus could see him. If you look at the woman with the issue of blood, the Bible tells us that she moved through the crowd so she could just touch the hem of his garment. Because she moved, she got the miracle. I want to say to you this morning, the time for just saying, God, you do it all is over. We've got to come to a point where we realize sometimes we need to make the move and then God will do what he has promised he will do. Then your light will shine in the darkness. The list could go on. Movement is needed sometimes before a miracle happens. Sometimes we want miracles with no risk and with no movement. I don't think those really exist, if I'm honest. I don't think we get those. I don't think you get miracles with no movement. And sometimes we choose not to move, and there are reasons that we can choose what not to move. Sometimes it's because of circumstance, you know? Sometimes I can't move because of this, God. I can't move because of this circumstance. I can't move because I've been through this. Sometimes your movement will break your circumstance. Sometimes your movement will bring a change in your circumstance. Sometimes we don't move because of the past. Do you know what? We have all been hurt at some point, but we have to choose to move again. I can remember leading worship at conference just after my marriage broke down, and I was stood leading worship, and I'd been there all week, 3,000 people, most of whom knew what I had been through or knew the kind of headlines of what I had been through. And I was stood there, and I went on the final day. I'm like, God, I have got nothing. I've served well. I've sang my heart out, but I have got nothing yet from you. And on the last night, a guy called John King, who's prophesied over me twice, and I think those are the only two times I've really seen him, he turned to me and he says, you, that never happens to me. Like, I could be wearing bright orange, have a very tall hat on, be stood on a chair, jumping up and down, and they'd pick the person next to me who was really short, right? That's the way it happens usually with me, okay? And he just looked at me and went, you. And I was like, yeah? And this is what he said to me, and I've seen this come true in my life. He says, the next move you make will open the door to your miracle. He had no idea. He was from America. He had no idea what I'd been through. The next move you make will open the door to your miracle. Do you know what? It was absolutely true. Moving opens doors to miracles. Yes, sometimes we say, I can't because of my past. Yes, you can. We've all been hurt at some point, but sometimes we need to choose to move on. Sometimes we choose not to move because it's just comfortable. Have you ever said these words? Maybe you won't admit it. It's just a season where I just need to receive. Where I just need to come and I just need to receive. Do you know what? God didn't birth the church as a receiving club. He birthed the church so mankind could know about him. He birthed the church so people could know about a relationship with Jesus Christ. And we kind of make it into this. Let's just all. And I love those moments where I receive from God. I cherish them. That conference I've just told you was 20 years ago. I cherish them. I love those moments where God just does something in my life. It's incredible. But if I live my life, for some of you, the season of I just need to receive is turning into a lifetime. Let's not say we're not moving because it's not comfortable. Moving is never comfortable. Moving forward is never comfortable, but it is essential. So right now, what miracle are you praying for? What move do you need to make? Because Isaiah 58 says, when you do this, when you feed the poor, when you have compassion, when you break injustice, when you do all of this, then your light will break out. Then your righteousness will precede and protect you. Then when you call on me, I will let you know that I am here. Then you will rebuild your community. Then something great will happen. Sometimes we need to move first. I want you to take time this summer. This is why I've preached this now. To consider what your move is going to be. You know, within this house, we need people to move so that we can do what God has called us to do. And for us as a church, our next move is dependent on us all working together. We need people to move into position to give us strength in moving forward. We're not going to move forward just with what we've had before. We need to move forward with a new strength. We need people to position themselves to be a producer, not just a consumer, not just to come and take. We need people to position themselves to come and give to others. We need people to position themselves to host and to greet people as they come in. In a church of 120 people, we have about 8 of you. And thank you to those who do come and serve on our hospitality. But in a church of 120, there's 8 people who do that. And I just think we should applaud them right now. And as well as applaud them, why not consider joining them? Because we need people to be positioned to meet people, to serve people, to host people. We need people to move and position themselves in our kids program, into our prayer program, into our worship scene, into our connect groups. We need people to move into teams that set up the building over summer. You know, we're going to need some of you to move into position to help us decorate. We want to provide a great kids zone through there. And I know the door's locked at the moment, okay, because that's going to be our kids zone from September onwards. We need to redecorate that place in summer. We're going to be giving you dates in the next week or so of when that is going to happen. And we need your help. We need you to position yourself. And for some of you, that I mean moving off the sofa and moving down here one evening to paint a wall. You're not just painting a wall. You're creating a place. You're creating a space. We need to move into position. As I was sat praying this week, this sentence came into my head that I'm pretty sure was the Holy Spirit talking to me. And it just... I'll read you exactly what came into my head. You can sit on the sidelines and have your opinions, or you can get involved and be an influence. You can sit on the sideline and have your opinion of how things are going in whatever area. It could be your job. It could be, you know, in your school. It could be in our church, or you can get involved and be an influence. I always think influence is better than opinion. Because actually influence gives a voice to your opinion, and influence gives an opinion some legs to stand on and somewhere to go. I want to say to you this morning, let's be people who get involved and who are an influence in this house, in this community. Let's not just be people who sit and have our opinions that appear on Move Louth Forward or whatever it is on Facebook. Let's not be people just with opinions. Let's be people with involvement and with influence. If we want God to move like I think we want God to move, maybe we have to move first. Maybe we have to do so. Maybe we have to move our attitudes or our opinions or the way that we're thinking. Maybe we have to move some of the things that we are doing for God to be able to move in the way that he wants to. And so this morning, I ask you the question, what's your move going to be? I want you to take time this summer as we relax, as we chill, and think that over. God, what is my move going to be? What do you want it to be, Lord? And then make the decisions necessary to make that move, to not just sit on the sideline with an opinion, but to get involved and have an influence.